Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Mears. Hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Brett Mears does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Some weeks when I hear that clip of us calling fights together, circa 2015, I get more emotional than others. Some weeks I'm so focused on Khabib and the show that I'm not even listening to the open. Today, though, I'm getting a little bit emotional. Maybe it's just because I'm 42.
The good old days. Remember that?
Not that
prepping
long ago.
For these fights? Man.
Well, today is Sunday, November 1st, 2020. Quick turn for episode 274 of the Anik and Florian podcast. A lot to get to today. We're certainly going to try not to shortchange Anderson Silva and Bryce Mitchell and everything that happened over the weekend at the UFC Apex, but a lot of the headlines really center on what Dana White said after the fight. So we'll get into some of that, and time permitting also Ken Flo's thoughts on Khamzat Chimaev versus Leon Edwards. What a main event that is, December 19th, and what a way to close out the year. But we begin headlines with one of the best to ever do it, Ken Flo, the former UFC middleweight champion Anderson Silva. Does not go out in style if this is his last UFC fight. I thought there were moments of shine, if you will, for him, but overall not the result he was looking for. Dana White was regretful after the fact for even giving him this opportunity. Big win for Uriah Hall, but the story obviously is Silva, who seemingly steps away after this final UFC start at 45 years old.
You know, I have no idea why Dana is kind of regretful of putting him in there. I think that this was one of the better performances from Anderson Silva in a long time, in my opinion. I thought he looked tuned into the fight. I thought his chin was tucked. He was really trying to stay active. I thought where it went wrong for him was when he started getting overly aggressive and started winging punches, which threw himself off balance. And right around that same time, I think we had a tuned in Uriah Hall. And once he started landing some shots and after he dropped Anderson, I thought Uriah kind of shifted his confidence tremendously in the positive direction and caught Anderson again and then was able to put him away. I think Anderson is retiring, I think, at a good time. I hope that he does stay retired, because I don't want to see his legacy tarnished anymore. But I thought this was one of his better performances in a long time, John.
Yeah, I think there was a lot to extract from this performance that was good. And you're right, it was almost his own wayward offense that was used against him by Uriah Hall. Dana just didn't seem in a particularly great mood after the fact. He also said of Uriah Hall, I'm not sure if you caught the soundbite, but he said he was one of the most gun-shy fighters in the UFC. How would you assess the Uriah Hall performance? Certainly there was an uptick in the aggression and late in that third round, and obviously when the main event round's begun, he found that knockout stroke.
You know, I guess it's always easy to see, a fire and be like, that's not very hot. I'd walk through that. That looks seems easy enough.
All right.
Uriah Hall's fighting Anderson Silva, okay? He's fighting Anderson Silva. Now, when you fight a guy like Anderson Silva, you're fighting the legend, you're fighting the myth, and you're also fighting the actual fighter who has the technical skills and the power to still put you out. So I think while I do think that Uriah Hall was trying to find Anderson's rhythm out there and trying to get his confidence going, I do think that you do want to have a certain amount of caution, right? I mean, just to go forward and be like, you know, I don't understand why he just doesn't go out there and look to knock him out. That is not an easy thing to do, and not an easy thing to do against a tall, lanky, extremely experienced and technical Anderson Silva.
And ultimately, if you're Uriah Hall, what you're looking for, I keep going back to the Wikipedia page, but you're looking for a green stripe next to Anderson Silva, and you're looking for a finish. And it's almost like you don't care how you get it. Ideally, you don't get it by him getting injured. But Uriah Hall went in there to finish the fight. I do think there was sort of a calculated nature to him, especially early on, and I'm certainly okay with it. But as far as putting Anderson Silva's career into proper context, it is very weird to have all these all-timers sort of retiring around the same time. Daniel Cormier, Khabib Nurmagomedov last week. More on that in a minute, of course, because that seems less final maybe than it did a week ago. But you have Anderson Silva, who at one point was the measuring stick for pound-for-pound greatness, Ken Flo, the most dominant champion in the UFC. And the ledger goes from 33-4 to 34-11. And it's hard for me to not think about the end of your career. And I know it was a back injury that ultimately forced you to step away. But your last fight was for a belt, and you just weren't going to hang around and be looking at an ugly Wikipedia page with a bunch of red at the end of your career. And so he goes 33-4 to 34-11. If I'm inclusive in the GOAT conversation, he is certainly in my top five. I don't know how you talk about UFC history without repeatedly getting back to the name Anderson Silva, but public opinion seems very much split as far as his legacy is concerned.
John, I appreciate you trying to inject me into the GOAT conversation. You know, I'm just not going to accept that, though, John. Well, you know, I refute. No, I just, of course, I'm joking. You know, I think that, you know, for Anderson, yeah, it's tough, man. You know, again, I think so many fighters just kind of become institutionalized in a lot of ways. And just this is the only thing we know and the only thing we do. I do think, though, that when you look at Anderson Silva, there are kind of two of them, right? There's the Anderson Silva that when he's electric and when he finds a willing dance partner, not only will he beat you, but he'll make you look foolish. He could defeat a Vitor Belfort in the first round where not a whole lot is happening. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Vitor Belfort is sleeping on the canvas in round one. So, you know, he has these magical type skills when he's on, but when he's off, he'll have a fight against, let's say, a Damian Maia at 185 pounds where they're kind of, you know, looking at each other for a long time and not a whole lot of action going on. But I will argue that when Anderson Silva was on, there were very few people that were on his level that he could absolutely, you know, stake a claim to being the greatest of all time when he was on his game. He was just unbelievable. Whether you look at his performance against Forrest Griffin at 205 pounds or so many of the amazing knockouts that he had throughout his career, Anderson Silva was the man.
To be able to interview him in that octagon in Brazil, I believe after his loss to Jared Cannonier, is something that I'll never forget. He's the consummate gentleman, dear friend of one of our longtime listeners, Heidi Dean, UFC staffer. And I know this is an emotional morning and week for Heidi and a lot of people who got to know this just giant of a man. I mean, there's no overstating his legend for me. If you want to put an asterisk on it, then go ahead and do so. But we congratulate Anderson Silva on obviously a historic career. As far as Uriah Hall's concerned, you know, competitive top 10 fighter. I think if you read deeper into what Dana White was saying, he just didn't see Uriah Hall looking the part of truly elite, bona fide middleweight contender taking advantage of a main event spotlight, right? Like, I'm not putting Israel Adesanya on a Valentina Shevchenko level in terms of dominating his or her respective opposition, but you didn't watch Uriah Hall Saturday night, Ken Flo, and think that he's not, you know, +5, +600 against Israel Adesanya, right?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I think the other thing is, you know, while we're bringing up Israel Adesanya, I mean, let's look at Israel's fight against Anderson Silva. I mean, it's not like he went out there and got the finish against him either. I mean, so Anderson Silva isn't exactly an easy guy to just go out there and just knock out. One doesn't just go out there and knock out Anderson Silva. Right. There's a method to the madness. Uriah Hall, it took him a little bit longer to figure out what his method was going to be. And once he did, I thought he was largely dominant. I do think that Uriah Hall is a special talent as far as his physical abilities, his speed, his ability to knock you out. I mean, before the Anthony Buckley fight, before the Anthony Buckley knockout, there was the Uriah Hall knockout as well. And he had a few of those, you know, the spinning back kick where he knocked out Gegard Mousasi. Does anybody remember that when he knocked him out with a very similar knockout? It didn't knock him out cold right straight away, but it's what led to the knockout.
No doubt.
He is a spectacular striker and getting better and really maturing as a fighter. I don't think he's there yet as far as getting that title shot against Israel Adesanya, but he's on his way. Another couple impressive wins, and I think things can get interesting.
Yeah, he'll need two more wins, and you'd like to see him against the Darren Tills of the world right now in current form. But most knockouts in UFC middleweight history, Anderson Silva and Thiago Santos with 8, and then 5 others tied with 7, and Uriah Hall is among them. And you don't go to the general Saif Saud and sleep on an air mattress at Fortis MMA if you don't have the desire and the hunger. And a lot of people believe that that is prerequisite, one, to being a UFC champion. So I'm not trying to cut down Uriah Hall at all. You know, I do believe that he needed a finish this weekend in that minus 225 range. Those are fights you're supposed to go out and finish. And he certainly did that. So we'll see what they do with Uriah Hall. As big a headline maker over the weekend was Thug Nasty Bryce Mitchell. And sometimes I feel like this is a guy that maybe you need to see fight live to truly appreciate. But I think this is an elite featherweight, Ken Flo. I thought he fought a very game and prime Andre Feely. I think he fought the best version of Andre Feely. I thought Feely did some very good things defensively. Again, my eyes are not your eyes, but I don't know. This was a high-quality win, and I think it puts Mitchell on a fast track to top 10 opposition. Your thoughts?
I would say it's a quality win for sure. I think that Andre Feely has been largely inconsistent through most of his career. There's been certain performances where I look at it and I said, this kid is on his game. He's looking fantastic. And there's other times that I see him where it seems like he kind of succumbs either to the mental pressure or maybe he gets overly emotional. I think that was one of those nights last night. Now, I think that Bryce Mitchell had a lot to do with it, the kind of pressure he was putting on him. I think it was a lot of pressure. And Bryce is largely way more inexperienced than Feely. So I thought that he was the guy who looked like the more mature and veteran fighter out there. And I think that's a testament to Bryce's mindset. I do think that there are some concerns when I see a guy like Bryce in a dominant position and get launched off of. When I see a guy get launched from a position, it means that he doesn't understand the position well enough. It's not because Feely did something great. When Feely's escaping the guard, I think that is largely Feely doing something well. When I see someone bench press someone off, it means that the person on top isn't doing something well. So Bryce still has some improvements to make, both in his stand-up and his ground game. What that means is that people better fight him sooner than later, because Bryce is going to get better. And I do think he's going to give a lot of people trouble if he continues to improve like we're seeing.
So in terms of Andre Feely defensively, and I know much was made on the broadcast of him bringing in Gary Tonin, you're right to point out that one time that was sort of a high amplitude escape, if you will. And Bryce Mitchell seemed to immediately criticize himself in the post-fight interview for that particular part of the fight, because I think somebody on his level is humbled by that transition for sure. But if you're Andre Feely, right, you hate to paint a guy with a gatekeeper brush, but this is sort of a tough one for him to swallow. And I do think physically, mentally, emotionally, he put himself in position to win this fight. I do think in the 30-footer, maybe it would have been a little bit different, but just a varied takedown approach from Mitchell. And every time you thought maybe his cardio was going to abandon him and allow Feely to keep the fight upright, it never happened.
Bryce is a grimy and tough kid. That's one thing we found out with this fight. And I think this is kind of a great way of experiencing that, right? Now, obviously getting the win and still being in a tough fight and being in some tough spots and having to really dig deep and put that guy right back on his mat, right back on the mat. I thought, showed that Bryce is a game competitor. He's not a guy who's going to just go away if he gets hurt. So I thought that was a good sign.
Yeah.
But for Feely, unfortunately, I think you are correct that this kind of solidifies that gatekeeper status, right? I mean, he called out Bryce Mitchell. He was the guy who wanted this fight, and he failed in his attempt. And I thought that, you know, the first round, he was dominated. You could have an argument that was a 10-8, actually. I thought the second round, he did a much better job coming back. Bryce Mitchell almost stole that round. I thought Feely just edged him out because of how it finished. And then the third round, I thought he was dominated again. So unfortunate for Feely, who now really has to dig his way back. And, you know, it's really tough, especially given his inconsistency over the last couple years.
I think you set it up beautifully. I think big picture for Thug Nasty, he's going to get another big high-profile fight. He certainly is compelling to listen to, whether it's a post-fight interview or a post-fight scrum, even if you don't agree with the messaging. But again, when I think of these pressure guys like Khabib Nurmagomedov and Curtis Blaydes and Merab Dwalishvili, you know, I'm starting to think of Bryce Mitchell in that class. Like, just don't want to be betting against these guys who have the heart and the cardio and the volume takedowns. And again, doing it in a number of different ways, deceptively quickly at times to get Feely down. And I don't know. It's a tough one for Feely, but a great fight, and certainly the fight for me that I was most excited about over the weekend. Before we spin it forward, you got anything for me on Greg Hardy? He obviously was pretty winded after the fact, and I just think that he's a big athlete moving around a lot of weight. But I really can't help but wonder if Greg Hardy had been a lifelong martial artist, you know, where he'd be at right now, because the improvements have been pretty significant. Kempfo, what'd you think about Hardy against the crochet boss Maurice Greene?
I thought Hardy looked great. I thought that he was, you know, way more calculated. And then once he kind of figured out, or once he felt that Green really wasn't too much of a threat, he was just kind of disrespecting him out there. He was just like, oh, I got you. I'm going to knock you out, or I'm going to take you down and beat you up. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, I thought he showed a much more well-rounded game and a very tactical approach for Greg Hardy. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was really dominant. I didn't see Maurice Greene really landing a whole lot. I thought Maurice Greene was going to give him a lot more trouble. And I thought he was going to pose some problems and throw some things at Greg Hardy that he hadn't seen before. That was just not the case. Hardy looked very comfortable for the most part. When he did get gassed, he did a good job of kind of just waiting and catching his breath and doing the right things to kind of avoid damage. And then he took him out when he needed to. I thought it was a solid performance from Greg Hardy.
It's hard for me as an NFL fan, on the level that I'm an NFL fan and an American, to not be rooting for this guy, right, Kenflo? I mean, certainly his exit unceremonious from the NFL is well documented, as are some of the issues that he dealt with in the past. But judging him based upon his UFC body of work and the way he has handled himself since becoming a professional mixed martial artist, I can't help but find myself rooting for the guy. And if he can realize success in the form of getting to be top 10 in the world, coupled with what he did in the NFL, you know, he ain't Bo Jackson, but it's pretty damn impressive. You know, in 2013, he turned in a historically great season for an NFL defensive lineman. And I don't know, man, I think there are guys in the top 15 at heavyweight right now that he could be for sure.
You know, he's clearly a good athlete. He is dedicated to improving his craft. And I think we'll continue to see those changes as long as he keeps that mindset. And, you know, I think that everybody deserves a second chance. And I think martial arts kind of puts people in the right mindset and keeps them humble. Yeah. And gets them to reflect on what you're doing and what you've done and all that stuff. And it looks like Hardy is headed down the right path. And, you know, I wish him the best, man.
I need to get back on my martial arts quest, Kenflo.
Yeah, why not, man?
So just because this show is not live, I want to tell the listeners right now, it is Sunday morning, 11:21 a.m. Eastern. Ray Longo, is he still sleeping, Cody? I mean, can you just give me a nod? It seems like Longo might still be sleeping. No, he's awake? All right. So because there's a lot else I want to get to, right? If Ray isn't going to be awake, we could just steamroll through some of these headlines. But it looks like Ray Longo is coming up in about 4 minutes. So, Kenflo, very quickly. So, Dana White said after the fights this weekend that Jan Błachowicz will be next for Israel Adesanya. So, Błachowicz, his wife or fiance, I believe, is going to have a baby boy in December. Błachowicz mentioned March as a possible return. But Israel Adesanya, because the number one contender, the clear number one contender, Robert Whittaker, does not want to fight Adesanya right now, in some part because he has a fourth kid on the way in January. Okay. Jan Błachowicz and Adesanya is going to be the fight, seemingly for the 205-pound title, as Adesanya gets his opportunity to become a simultaneous two-division champion. And I think for Błachowicz, you know, I think it's a little disappointing for Thiago Santos and Glover Teixeira fighting in a main event this weekend. But if you're Jan Błachowicz and you're not getting the John Jones fight for title defense number one, Flo, this would be the next best thing, I would think.
This was interesting, man. It kind of was okay. Crap moment for me seeing that it was announced. I think I don't know. I have mixed feelings.
Tell us
on this
how
one.
You really feel. Ken.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on this. You know, first of all, Israel Adesanya is an absolutely brilliant fighter, and I do think that he could beat a guy like a Jan Błachowicz. The problem is, What happens after that? Is he going to fight either Glover Teixeira or Thiago Santos? Is he going to fight all these 205ers one after another? What happens to the 185-pound division? Is he going to go back and forth? And what we've seen usually when someone is doing that is that it doesn't last long one way or another. Either they lose or they have to choose what division they're going to be in. So I don't want to say it's too quick for Israel Adesanya. I'm just surprised by the announcement. And it's about to get interesting, especially given the John Jones and Israel Adesanya back and forth between those two. So I don't know. I think it opens up a lot of possibilities for the UFC and perhaps more options. It was curious. It was interesting.
I think part of it is that Adesanya is just such a willing and hungry competitor right now. And again, he has kept this furious schedule that seemingly he wants to keep again in 2021. So you turn him around in a few months, and if he does become the champion, and I think it's a tall ask, but if he does beat Błachowicz and then he and Jones fight for the light heavyweight title, that only heightens the stakes. Speaking of stakes, seems also that Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier is a done deal. Poirier says it'll be at 155 pounds, but it does not appear that the belt is going to be on the line, Kenny. It seems like Dana and the UFC brass would like to give Khabib every opportunity to be thoughtful about this decision before he ultimately vacates the undisputed title. Cejudo was very quick to vacate, and they were very quick to move forward with a title fight. But it seems, at least right now, Kenny, that Dustin and Conor would be a likely eliminator. It was already agreed for January 23rd. And the good news is it'll be at lightweight, which just makes it super fucking relevant.
Oh, man. I mean, that's the fight to make. We were talking about it on the last show, and I think that's absolutely the right decision. I'm really curious to see how Dustin Poirier has improved since then. Clearly he has improved since their first fight. But how does he deal with those skills against Conor McGregor? I don't know. I still think it's a tough matchup for him, but Dustin Poirier is a problem for anybody. And I think he's fighting him at the right time right now. So I think it's a huge fight. You know, in regards to it not being for a title at this point, I would say let's wait and see. I think that if Khabib gets back to Dana and said, "Hey, listen, man, I'm done. This is it," then that's right. going to be for a belt. There's right. no ifs, right. ands, or buts about it.
Right.
I think part of it is being respectful to Khabib and allowing him that space to come back if he wants to. Because right. let's face it, there's no bigger fight in the UFC right. than Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor for that 155-pound strap.
No, you're right. Being respectful to Khabib and his 30 million followers or so on Instagram. But it's interesting because Khabib has only competed once a year for the last couple, and it's hard to believe he would compete anytime before like July of 2021. And again, I'm not sure how many times he really wants to cut down to 155 pounds in the future. It was another not great cut, I think. So I don't know. I think there are a lot of things in play now with the lightweight division now that at least there's going to be a little bit of a holding pattern. I would also say, as we outlined some of those lightweight contenders on the show last week, Dustin Poirier was the hardest guy to make a case against. But a lot of these guys, Kenny, are coming off a loss. So this actually benefits a guy like Tony Ferguson or a guy like Justin Gaethje in this conversation because they can build up a lightweight winning streak, even just getting a win singularly in a fight, and all of a sudden put themselves back in the mix. So, you know, without an obvious number one versus number two, I'm okay if McGregor and Poirier doesn't have championship stakes, but I don't know. I think you have some champions who you can trot out there three times a year. Khabib is just not going to be that guy, despite the fact that there are obviously a lineup of contenders waiting for that shot at the greatest of all time in that division. A couple other things before we close the book on UFC Fight Night, Hall versus Silva. So the Greg Hardy fight got me thinking, Ken Flo, about the idling Francis Ngannou and just how good Francis Ngannou is, how good he is now, seemingly how good he must be relative to that first meeting with Stipe. But, you know, the guy has fought just a few seconds now in a couple years, despite dusting all these top guys. And it feels like we have this ferocious Mike Tyson-like heavyweight entering his fighting prime, and it's going to be hard to get him a fight. It's going to be Stipe. I guess you're just going to tell me to be patient, right? Just be patient.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I'm sure the UFC wants to see him fight really badly as well. But yeah, he's in that kind of that zone where, you know, I don't think a whole lot of people want to fight him. And maybe the people that do want to fight him are maybe unranked, where it doesn't benefit Francis Ngannou at this point.
Right. Thank God for Jairzinho Rozenstruik fucking calling the guy out.
Yeah.
Really wouldn't have a lot of fights. I mean, Flo, like, I'm just looking this up on my phone right now. So 20 seconds, 71 seconds, 26 seconds, 45 seconds, right? And that takes you all the way back to that that Derek Lewis outlier, which was midway through 2018. So,
right,
you know, it's just a few seconds, right? I don't know. I just had Francis Ngannou's name in the rundown because as I'm watching Greg Hardy and getting excited about him, I'm thinking, man, you know? Like, if anybody deserves to wait until August, it's Stipe. But I guess that's just has to be the fight. Am I wrong?
And no, absolutely. That's a tremendous fight. I think that you look at, you know, you talk about those fights. You're like, yeah, well, Francis Ngannou's more experienced now. But yeah, that's true. He has more fights. But let's talk about how many minutes he's actually spent in the UFC octagon, especially working on his grappling. Not a whole lot. He doesn't even get there because he's so damn explosive and he's so fast. He's so powerful. But I do think that, you know, he's made some changes. And I think that Stipe rematch is going to be very interesting.
And I'm sure Eric Nixick and others would speak a lot about the value of those training camps. But you're right. Not a lot of octagon time accrued for Francis Ngannou. All right. Ray Longo in 60 seconds. But we all know 2020 has been a little nuts. Doesn't mean you should disregard taking care of yours. Manscaped is on a mission to take care of your manhood with their below-the-waist grooming and hygiene products. And the mission has now gone international. Manscaped has now released their products in the UK, Canada, and Australia. And that includes the Lawnmower 3.0. As many of you know, Manscaped has changed the way I go about my hygiene. You know, I give myself a skin fade every 4 or 5 days. But no longer am I using the same trimmer on my face and my head as I use down there, because I'm using the Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof technology on the lawnmower, by the way. And Manscaped has now also just released the Crop Care Kit as well, includes all sorts of products. The ball wipes, not a personal favorite of Ken Flo yet, but they're in the mail. And how about the foot deodorant, the body wash in that bundle as well, and all these formulations, all vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, and paraben-free. Ken will tell you exactly what all of that means, but you know you're in good hands. And if you're not there yet with Manscaped, now is the time to get in on the craze. Get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com/AF. No promo code required. Just go to manscaped.com/AF for 20% off and free shipping. Manscaped.com/AF. I wonder if we took a Lawnmower 3.0 to the top of Longo's head, if it would cut anything. I bet it would. Let's get to Ray Longo.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Longo on that turn and burn after post-fight obligations on extra rounds. He now joins us for his weekly Ray Longo Minute. You were in Philadelphia last night, or was it a Friday night show?
I was there Thursday and Friday.
Okay.
We had a lot going on. A lot, John.
And I know the team did pretty well, but one guy that I want to spotlight here off the top of the segment for the star of the show is Pumi Nakuda, 25 years old, 2-0 now as a pro, a win at CFFC. So you were in the building, and this is a guy that I met, I believe, in Vegas a few weeks ago. Flyweight division, is that right?
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. You did meet him, I believe, when we were outside. Yeah, I met him before. No, I don't know if he was there with me, but you did meet him, though. He was out there with Aljo for a while.
So some good amateur experience, obviously, now 2-0 as a pro. Talk to me about Pumi. Don't call him fucking Fumi.
Yeah, what the heck is going to happen? How dare you?
Not me.
Listen, you know, I believe he was 5 or 6-0 as an amateur. Now he's 2-0 as a pro. I'm going to say all dominant wins. The sky is the limit for this kid, you know, and even, you know, I remember talking to Aljo a while back. He goes, you know, if he doesn't do anything, I'd be really disappointed. Like, even if he didn't follow it or complete what he started, but he's probably one of the most talented kids in the gym. And, you know, Marab used him as a sparring partner. The only guy that could match Marab with his gas tank is this kid. So really, really, Kenny, you'd love him, man. Go look. He's like, I'm going to say, like a Demetrius Johnson. He's going to be that. That's how good he's going to be.
Wow.
And if you look at him, you know, at an early stage, I don't want to go too crazy because sometimes you put the kiss of death on somebody, but he's a super talented kid. He is going to do great one way or the other. So beautiful personality, great, you know, great energy in the gym. And man, he performs, man. He's a great kid with super talent, man. He put it all together the other night against a tough kid. I expect big things out of him. I really do.
Speaking of big things, talk to me about Bryce Mitchell. Some would call him Thug Nasty out of the great state of Arkansas. Big co-main event win over Andre Feely. Your thoughts on Bryce Mitchell Saturday night and ultimately big picture, how high is the ceiling?
Yeah, let me just – I just want to say one more thing, John, because I got to spread the love out, because we had three guys fighting. I had Dylan Montello in Florida on a promotion. What a beautiful walk-away knockout. Two beautiful right hands in a row. Took the guy out in the second round. I mean, picture-perfect distance, timing, composure. It's a great fight to look at, because he fought a jiu-jitsu guy out of Vegas. Man, I'm blanking on everybody's names, but – the guy almost had him in a heel hook in the first, you know, first round. That's all he wanted to do was get the takedown, but kind of gassed himself out. And then Dylan just finished it in the second. And we also had James Gonzalez, who had a tough fight but lost. So I can't do that to everybody.
Do your regional level fighters listen to the Anakin Florian podcast? Because we shout them all out.
Every one of them.
All right. We're going to make a point. I'm sorry to shortchange them. But let's get to Thug
Bryce
Filthy.
Mitchell, man.
Thug Nasty.
What a beautiful fight against a great, you know, against a really super talented opponent. I think it was, you know, he looks like he's stepping up in increments and, you know, he's very unassuming, but he looks like he's gaining confidence. And that was a great fight for a variety of reasons, Kenny. You know what I mean? Because I think it was a step up for him. Feely's been around forever. He's fought a lot of great guys. So, super impressed with his takedowns, his stand-ups getting better, his mindset. He's definitely a tough kid. He's not going anywhere. He was in the gym maybe a couple of years ago, and again, I could be off on my timeline, but super nice guy, and again, unassuming. You look at him, you don't really see anything, and then he gets in there, and he's just not easy. You know, he's good. He's really, really good. He impressed me 3 or 4 years ago. And even more impressed now. I thought that was a great win for him. And he's a problem. You know, if he keeps growing at this rate, he's going to be a problem.
There's a filmmaker out there, and I am disappointed that the name is escaping me, but there's a lot of Bryce Mitchell content out there, documentary style, that really just endeared him to the masses and people like me. I can't get enough of the Bryce Mitchell content. You got anything for us on Anderson Silva? I mean, we kind of exhausted it off the top. I mean, I think people sometimes have a hard time putting his legacy into context. And, you know, when you go from 33-4 to 34-11, it doesn't necessarily help. But as Ken Flo articulated off the top, this performance was not without merit. What'd you think of the Spider in a loss to Uriah Hall?
Look, I'm just not a big fan of a 45-year-old guy going up against a younger mm-hmm. experienced fighter. I don't see the point in it unless, you know, you need money or whatever it is. And I don't even like that. But I want to remember that guy for who he was. And that's why, again, like he even said it in the post-fight interview. It's like, you know, fighters, you know, it's hard to walk away. You know, it's hard to walk away. And that's why I really admire, like, the Khabibs and Cejudo that can walk away at a time when they're at the top. So we're never going to see those guys get the shit knocked out of them, you know, 4 or 5 times in a row. And I think there's something to that. You know, I might be in the minority, but that's the way I feel. I want to remember Anderson Silva for when he was Anderson Silva. I didn't even want to see that fight last night. And my concern is that, you know, that Uriah Hall's such a nice guy. He really is. And you could see the emotion. I think that's real, man. That was one of his idols that he had to beat the crap out of. And I didn't even think, I thought like the first two rounds, look, I thought Anderson looked great hitting the mitts before the fight. I thought his movement's still there. You could see for a 45-year-old, he's absolutely fantastic. There's no doubt about it. He's still good. But to compete in this arena against younger guys, that's a different level. You know, he's going to be able to do what he did last night forever, I think, at this point. He could go another 5 years. I thought he showed you know, and I don't know if that was Uriah Hall respecting him too much. That was my point. I thought Uriah was such a nice guy. He might even let him win, try to make it look good. And who knows, you know?
See, I don't think Kenny and I agree with that because Anderson Silva will fuck you up if you're not careful. And then you've lost to a 45-year-old Anderson Silva, right? Yeah. Ken Flo, I think there's some truth in the earlier part, but I don't think Uriah Hall was not pulling the trigger because he didn't want to fuck up an old man.
I said that was my concern, that I think Uriah was that guy that he could take a loss and it wouldn't matter to him, because you know what I'm saying? I think, again, this is craziness, but you know what? I just think Uriah is that guy. That's why he was crying at the end.
Right. You're right. You
know, he had to hurt somebody, I believe, really, he did idolize. And that's a shitty feeling, John. It really is. That's a shitty feeling. You know, I mean, you know, it's almost like with your old man. You don't want to beat your father at anything. You know what I mean? And then, you know, the guy's getting older and you beat him. And then, I kind of been through that. I felt like shit. You know what I mean? So I know where Uriah is coming from. So I'm not saying he didn't. I said that was a possibility. I just didn't see the purpose of that fight.
It's always been, you know, and it doesn't mean we have to accept it and like it, but it's always been the nature of combat sports in a lot of ways, right? It's the guy, he's this legend, and then all of a sudden, once he starts fading, feed him to the young lions so we can create new legends. And this game will chew you up and spit you out and if you don't get out in time, and that's kind of just a reality.
Yeah, and again, he's still good. He's still going to beat the crap out of a guy with no experience or whatever, maybe even guys with some experience, but what's the point? You know, he's not like, he'd have to tell me exactly what his goal was. You know, if his goal was to make another $2 million for his family and he doesn't care what happens to him, I'm for him, you know, but I don't know what he's thinking. And well, I think, again, this is a guy that was great, that provided so many headlines. And John, my other thing was, this is a sport where the fans, I believe, turn over every 4 or 5 years. So there's people out there that never saw him fight before. Trust me, I talked to a lot of young kids that are just tuning in now.
Right.
That's what they're going to remember. And then their dad got to go, you got to go look at that guy when he was this. And, oh, yeah, dad, sure. Yeah, I'm sure. Right. That's the problem I had. I just think it's nice. I don't know. I always remember my old man telling, I don't even know if it's true, but I think Joe DiMaggio left, you know, while he was still great. You never saw him dripping. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you want to go, you know, watch a great singer, you know, for the last time, forgetting the words to songs and stumbling around. Right. I don't know. Right. I mean,
no, it makes sense.
You know, that's all I'm saying. I love the guy. You know, he gave us so many things, even when he beat Franklin in the clinch, Ken, he brought back, you know, the plum or the tie clinch, and everybody was doing it. And, you know, he had that up elbow on Fricklin. He front kicked a super talented Belfort in the face. That's it. That's the memory I want. I don't want this memory of Uriah Hall, you know, knocking him down with a check hook and then beating the shit out of him on the floor. I mean, it's just.
Right.
And I don't know.
In terms of what he has to offer at 45 years old, maybe not much against Jared Cannonier, but Conor McGregor said sort of the nature, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the nature of the competitor is such in a lot of these guys that it's just about finding the right opponent. I mean, you mean to tell me there's not a 51-year-old kickboxer out there that Anderson Silva could knock out right now? You know, I'm not saying I want to see it, but
100%. But you said the key word, the right opponent.
Yes.
And yeah, of course he
not
can.
Not a top 10 bona fide middleweight.
Still moving good. You could still hit the pads good. I mean, look, I think, like what Tyson and Jones is doing, unbelievable. They're two 50-year-old guys. They're going to do an exhibit. That's where he's heading, and he'll be great. Throw him in the mix. He's good for that. You know what I mean? But at this, MMA, man, is tough to begin with. And, you know, a guy like the guys that really could last, the guys like Henderson, that they did the same thing, that power's the last thing to go. Henderson today, if he hits you with that right hand, I'm still sure he will knock you into another time zone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But with him, he was either going to win or lose by that right hand. That was it. He wasn't going to beat you any other way. And that's a little different. This guy needs, you know, the tricks and the movement. And that shit goes. The timing, you don't see the punches as good as you used to. That happens to fade a little quicker than your power. And he was more of a finesse player. He really wasn't a power player. he walked you into punches. You know, it was the punch you didn't see with Anderson. And that stuff has a tendency to go. Look, it happened to Leonard, man. That guy was unbelievable. Sugar Ray was by far the best boxer I ever saw. And, you know, at the end of his career, it just doesn't look the same. You know, that's why I love Hagler, man. He had that fight with Leonard, probably won, lost, whatever, close fight, walked away. All we think of Hagler is Hagler Hearns, Hagler Mugabe, all those great fights that Hagler had. We never saw him on the downside. And I think there's something to that, man. It's not easy.
No doubt.
I think that's, I'm just saying, I'm taking that side of the conversation.
Yeah, and I think there are athletes who accrue losses late in their career that think about that on an almost day-to-day basis. Man, why didn't I just walk away when I was 20-3 instead of being, 21-11? So I don't want to steal the thunder of your segment, and there are a few other UFC items that I want to get to with you. Yeah. But because you're the star of the show and because the MMA masses seem to think that I owe them a shoey, we're going to get the shoey out of the way here during the Ray Longo minute. Really? So essentially, if you don't know the story, and I'm not trying to put the spotlight on me, I'm just trying to honor my bets.
No, John,
because I'm a man of my word.
The spotlight is on you. You're doing a shoey.
Well, so because there were no fans on Fight Island, fans suggested that if Tai Tuivasa won, that I would do a shoey. And so I tweeted that I was in to do the shoey. Now, in that moment, of course, I forgot that maybe somebody might be spitting in it before I drank it. But thankfully, I have found out that is not a prerequisite to doing a shoey. But a lot of fans seem to think because Tai won the fight that I owe them a shoey.
Wow.
So Daniel Cormier brought it up on the air. He said he doesn't even want to spit in it. Like, he just wants me to do the shoey. And so unless you guys have anything that would further delay me, I just figured I would do the shoey for the Anakin Florian podcast audience. And then it would sort of live on in perpetuity if anybody questioned whether or not I made good on the bet.
Well, was Cormier's sweaty foot in that shoe or no?
My sweaty foot, I mean, full disclosure, like, I have run as many as 5 miles in these. They're Reebok's JJ Watt model, I believe.
Wait, hold up again, John. Hold up the bottom. The bottom.
There's dirt in the bottom of the shoe.
Can you poke holes in the bottom so the beer runs out? You're not really doing anything.
We'll see. All right. I'm going to get this shoey out of the way. I'm going to ask you in all my sobriety about Khamzat Chimaev and Leon Edwards. Okay.
All right. But do you want us to chant shoey? Shoey.
No, whatever you guys want to do, I'm pulling my mic up. You guys are going to have to carry the show. Last time I think I chugged a beer. Not all that long ago. Maybe I banged one back on Fight Island, but I used to do this with regularity at Gettysburg College back in the day, not out of a shoe, but just banging natural lights. I was the worst shotgunner in the world, not for lack of effort. All right, here we go, Ray. Here we go. Thanks for being here for this, Ray. I know not what you expected on a Sunday morning.
No, this is huge, man. This is
fine. There he is. John, getting ready to pour the beer into
his
shoe. Should
I spit in it, Kenny?
It might as well. I mean, it's your own. It's fine. You don't have it. It doesn't matter. There he goes. He just spit in the shoe. Now he's pouring. What is that? A Corona? I believe it's a Corona. He's got the Corona. He's pouring it into his Reebok shoe. And he's going to do this. He's going to do this, Ray. Let's see if he can do it all in one shot.
And then on November 1st.
It's going everywhere.
John Anik had a choice.
He's trying to catch the beer now with his other hand. He's doing a pretty good job now. That's much better. That is dedication.
Man, he actually made a funnel out of his hands.
Well done. Hey, they say how you do anything is how you do everything. Panic just killed it on that one.
So, you know when they say you're either all in or all out? This man is all in, Kenny.
He's taking extra sips. I love it.
We're going to proofread it. Daddy will be right downstairs, girls. Daddy will be right downstairs.
Imagine your kids. I think I just drink his breakfast out of his shoe.
Anik, you're the man, dude. Wow.
I wouldn't have done something.
I'm a wimp. I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. I had to pull it together because I was losing the beer all over the house here. My script for the main event challenge is ruined, but got a nice little buzz now, Raymond, not an empty stomach. A little fasted cardio before the show. We're okay.
Get those carbs in there.
All right. So,
He is. I'm impressed. I don't even know if I can go on. I might be shell shocked.
Well, let me ask you this, because Chris Weidman did factor prominently in this conversation, at least for a little bit there. Neil Magny does not get the Khamzat Chimaev fight. It goes to Leon Edwards, right? Excuse me. Bona fide top three welterweight in the world. I am so excited to be a fan December 19th, a week after the pay-per-view, and watch this main event. Like, I think this is a hugely compelling main event, and Ken Flo and I were going to talk about it. What do you think about Chimaev and Leon Edwards coming up here in about 7 weeks?
Man, I'm with you on that. I think it's going to be a great fight. I mean, when was the last time Edwards fought? He's got to have – it's had to be
a long time ago.
He seems like he – just has been totally out of the picture, and this kid's been active. I think that's going to play into it a lot. And big test for Chimaev. I mean, Edwards is squared away. I don't know, like, what he's been doing in the off time. I hope he's been – I mean, obviously he's been training, but it seems like it's been a year since we saw him, at least. I don't know.
Kenny, I feel like this is a really difficult matchup, as hard a matchup as Leon Edwards could have accepted, but certainly that comes with a lot of upside. I think he's title shot worthy right now. Of course, he has the history with the champion Kamar Usman, but I'm just pulling up the ledger on the 29-year-old Leon Rocky Edwards. So the last fight, was Rafael Dos Anjos, main event July of 2019.
Wow.
So, yeah, he was 10-3 after the Usman loss, and now he's 18-3, eight consecutive wins. Ken Flo, I just feel like, you know, not that he can't win it, not that he won't be favored, but there were certainly easier matchups out there for Leon Edwards than Khamzat Chimaev.
There's no doubt about that. And again, I think Kamaru Usman showed that it's possible to go in there and grind him against the fence and take him down repeatedly. Chimaev can certainly do that. But, you know, what Chimaev has that Usman doesn't really is what seems like a pretty good long range game with some serious knockout power. So here's a guy who's going to come down from 185 pounds. He's tall. He's lanky. He's strong. I think that for Edwards, hopefully we see him, I guess, get through some more of the layers of Chimaev, and we get to see, okay, exactly what this guy has. Because we haven't seen a whole lot. We've seen him either take you down, beat the hell out of you, and take you out, or he knocks you out in about a minute. So I'm really curious to see how Edwards approaches this fight. I think he's much better positioned than he was back when he fought Usman. He's a much better fighter. And if Chimaev's able to beat someone like Edwards at this point in his career, in only, what, his fourth? This is his fourth UFC fight? Or third?
Yeah,
I think it's crazy.
That
would be amazing if he's able to get a win against Edwards. That means that we have, you know, really a legitimate star in Khamzat Chimaev.
Yeah, and that's the question. And let me just say one thing with Weidman. It was Chimaev that called out Weidman. Weidman didn't call out Chimaev. He's just not going to back down from a fight.
Of course.
And my sentiments were, hey, if you're going to get him now. I mean, if that's what he wants, you know, we don't know what we don't like. Kenny says there's not a lot on him. Let's find out. You know what I mean? And I think the Edwards fight is going to prove that also. We're going to know if he's the real deal or not. We're going to see if he's got holes in his games that can be exploited in the future. And this is a big test. He seems like a young kid who's very, very brash. We're going to find out, man, because
no doubt.
I think, you know, he's definitely talking a huge game. And he has smashed some guys, but now he's going to get a guy that, you know, has been around for a while, that's fought some really good guys. And we will get a good gauge on what the ceiling is for this kid after this fight. But
Edwards is slick, man.
You know, it's almost like what Kevin Holland said. Give me a name guy. You know what I mean? Instead of guys that are coming in for the first time. We want to, you know, I think he's right with that. Let's see what he's got. Put him in there with guys that have some name value. And, you know, he looks like a scrappy kid, Holland. And I'd like to see how he fares against, you know, some of the guys that have been around for a while. And same thing for Chimaev. This is a huge test. This is a big jump.
Yeah, well, and the jump, though, that I think is enticing for fight fans. I was so excited when I saw that this fight was announced and that I would just be home 6 days before Christmas and able to watch this fight. Because for those who criticize the Gerald Mearsharp booking, this is the exact opposite of that. They're giving him the number one contender in the welterweight division. You know what I mean? So you beat Leon Edwards, and all of a sudden, you know, Gilbert Burns is going to be next, but short list at 170 pounds. Now that my office, by the way, smells like Theta Chi Fraternity House at Gettysburg College, it makes me want to go downstairs and get another beer. I mean, what are we trying to do here on an NFL Sunday? Just have a beer and, like, take a nap or try to get a buzz? So I'm going to get a beer while Cody gets Ian Parker on the line. Ray, before we let you go, 78% of our listeners who woke up early and voted in our poll believe that Thiago Santos is going to beat a 41-year-old Glover Teixeira this weekend. I think the fight is improperly priced. I think Glover Teixeira isn't getting enough respect from the odds makers, given Thiago Santos' layoff due to what was a very significant knee injury. And Santos is 36, right? Age is just a number. We need a main event pick from you, and then we'll let you get back to your Sunday and your NFL boycott and anything else you got going on.
Wow, that's a tough one, man. And I love Glover Teixeira too. Teixeira, so excuse me.
Ian Parker butchering not just the first name, but the last name too.
Glover. Why, I butchered that. That's just, that's Glover. My Long Island accent. What is it?
Glover, like four-leaf clover.
Oh, clover. Oh, my God. What was it? Perpetuity?
Perpetuity? Like, is that a four-leaf clover in your hair? What is that? Oh, no, that's just...
It's just dust. That's just a leaf from outside.
So Santos about minus 225, Teixeira in some spots as high as plus 195. Who wins the main event this Saturday night? And then, of course, if you want a recap, Ray Longo on extra rounds after the fact.
I'm going to have to go. I don't want to, but I'm going to go with Santos.
Okay. All right.
And I really don't want to because I love the other guy. But I think, man, I'll be pulling for Glover, but yeah. I will love But I'm gonna pick Santos if I had to make a if a guy had a gun to my head like you would say, John.
That's right. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're gracious with your time as always. It's great to see you, and we'll catch up on the other side. And it's back to Monday, I think, next week. We look forward to speaking with you then, sir.
Awesome. What was the reason for this? This in
myriad reasons, but Ken Flo had some television obligations, and we had some availability.
Maybe Ken Flo is requesting a jet to his next battle.
PJ. But Kenny is also on the East Coast. We're not going to tell you what state he's in, but because he's on the East Coast, we have more flexibility when it comes to our time slot. So
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Kenny, it's really happy to have you back on the East Coast. Where you've
been. That's exactly. Right. That's right. All right, Ray, get the fuck out of here. We love you. You're the star of the show. We'll talk to you next Monday. Yes.
All right, guys. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
Thank you, buddy.
Take care, guys.
Oh, my Sunday would be great. No boycott of the NFL over here. Today's main event challenge is brought to you by MyBookie, where winning season has now returned. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. It means insane props, epic bonuses, and the craziest cross-sport wagers out there. At MyBookie, winning season means watching live sports and betting on live sports all season long. And for a lot of you daily bettors out there like me, we're rejoicing because the NFL has returned in fine form. Action-packed Sundays, huge cash prizes, and the UFC, of course, is live straight through December 19th. So a lot of opportunities on the board to bet there. So why not make now the time to get in on the action. Use promo code ANICFLORIAN, one word, ANICFLORIAN, and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. So bet with the best this NFL season. For your chance to win big, use promo code ANICFLORIAN and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. All right, UFC Fight Night, Santos versus Teixeira. Saturday night, main card ESPN2. Let's get to the picks.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
And it is great to see my man Ian Parker, the Duck, on social media at Ian Parker MMA, but the handle likely to change to eventually include the Duck somehow, some way. And Ian has reason to smile. His first best bet came in. But I want to read you guys a text I got from Pahoompa. Marco Stamata, American top team jiu-jitsu coach. Tell Kenny and that other dude that picked Bobby Green to win that this win for Thiago Moises was for them. I'm mad that Thiago didn't finish, though. I love you. And Pahumpa is one of our longtime listeners, and that's okay, right? We all sort of articulated that we thought Bobby Green maybe was improperly priced in that minus 270 range, but just figured, Ken Flo, that I would share the text from Pahumpa, and you certainly thought that Thiago Moises was not getting the respect maybe from Vegas that he deserved, but big win for Moises nonetheless.
Absolutely. An excellent win. I think, you know, Bobby Green is always going to be a tough out, but to me, while he, you know, he gains more experience, skill wise, I haven't seen that improvement that I would like to see. Meanwhile, Moises is a guy that has been improving. You know, this time around, we saw his wrestling get better. You know, he's getting way more comfortable on the feet. When we saw him start out in the UFC, he was very hesitant on the feet, in my opinion. His wrestling really wasn't there. He's making the right improvements and got a nice win over a very tough Bobby Green.
Ian, I want to get your thoughts on Bryce Mitchell before we update the standings and move forward, and maybe some thoughts on Greg Hardy as well, because I know you're firmly on the Hardy train. But what do you think about Bryce Mitchell in terms of elite status and how far he can actually take this thing? I feel like we've kind of exhausted the win on the show, but I mean, do you see him as part of that featherweight elite or not yet?
What I saw last night, and Kenny and I were going back and forth during the back
and
on
forth text?
During the fight.
You and Ken Flo texting back and forth, huh?
Kenny only texts me when he's really mad about someone's performance and how what he does on Twitter. If he doesn't want to put it there, he texts me because he knows I'm listening and I'll respond. But it's funny though. It's like we share that wavelength. And sometimes when he texts me, I'm like, why does he always anger text me, but it's not at me? So it's like he likes to vent to me when he's frustrated, but he doesn't like me, but he kind of likes me. So we got like this good relationship, and he admitted to the Twitter world that he does like me a little bit. So, you know, we're slowly building up this bromance as, listen, I'm trying real hard with Kenny. You know, I'm giving him his space. I'm letting him text me what he wants. You know, we're in a good place right now. But
seriously, on Mitchell, yeah. Right? Like, because you guys were both on Andre Feely. And I told you privately my best bet of the weekend was Bryce Mitchell. And that's neither here nor there. Sure. But that's just because I've been blown away by him recently in person. So talk to me. I mean, you guys watch this with a more sophisticated eye than I do, obviously. So talk to me about Bryce Mitchell.
I think Kenny or I would have taken whoever was the underdog in this fight based on the way the show operates, to be fair. I think what we were kind of looking at was that Bryce hasn't fought the level of competition as Andre Feely has, or a fighter like Feely. And as you saw with Feely on the ground, the one thing that I was really impressed with him was his defense on the ground, right? He kept trying to get up. He was exploding. He was not really put, even when he got mounted for a second, he got back to guard. He was doing everything correct. The problem was he was so exhausted fighting that off that in that third round, where I believe it was tied 1-1 going in, Bryce was smart, didn't want to get hit with something else, took the fight to the ground. I was so impressed with how quickly he got the fight to the ground and how he wasn't even trying to bang with Feely. Feely was the obvious better striker throughout the fight, but even when Bryce Mitchell got put on his back, he reversed. And, you know, I just think the fight IQ that people aren't expecting, because the way he speaks sometimes and the way he always talks about the camo shorts and his car commercial, sometimes people take that for granted and think, oh, you know, he's this Southern boy that just wants to eat squirrel and got his nuts chopped off, whatever it was. But he's a really smart fighter, and he played into his strengths and he didn't fuck around. And that was super impressive. And yeah, you called it. You definitely said that was your best pick of the week. I'm pissed at myself because what was the other bet I gave you? But I was too much of a pussy to put
Jason
it out there.
Jason on the straight wager side.
Now, if you saw the blooper reel, and Kenny, I didn't send you this, I literally said, my best bet of the week is Jason Witt, because last time he showed potential, no, he fucking didn't. He got crushed. Why am I saying this on camera? And I had Cody edit that to just the parlay. But Jason Witt, I was really impressed with what he did as well. But Bryce Mitchell's got a nice future. I'd like to really see the next level of competition. And Andre Feely's still young. He'll bounce back as well.
And give me 30 seconds on Greg Hardy, if you would.
Oh, man. This dude possessed that type of power at any point. I thought he exerted a lot of energy in that first round. I do think that this was the right fight for him. I don't see him being a top five heavyweight, though, really for another year. I think he needs another couple of fights for the top five. I saw a lot of spots where if he doesn't get that knockdown, a lot of other fighters, if they're a volume striker, can outpoint him. You know, if they go at his ankles, he doesn't threaten the takedowns. You know, he's really just a power puncher, and I think he's gotten better. His improvement is still there. But, you know, it's funny. We see it against a guy like Mo Green, but then, you know, against the higher level, we don't see that as much. So he's going to have to get tested again really soon. But I think he's going to have to really pace himself in that first round, not get overly excited when he drops the guy. And when he's on top, he doesn't have to throw the hardest punches. He could do the volume. He could take his time, save his energy, and maybe also work on some top submissions like an arm triangle from the top in advanced position. That's my opinion on Hardy.
All right, let's spin it forward, guys. Team Attic now leads at 136 to 133. So it was a 3-0 week. Parker goes 2-2. Ken Flo, almost all underdog selections, by the way, Ken Flo, if it's any consolation. He had three underdogs, but it's 136-133, and it's UFC Fight Night Santos versus Teixeira. Don't forget, we will have a best bet from the Duck coming up this Friday on our Anik Florian Pod media channels. But first fight for us today, first fight on the main card this weekend, can be seen on both ESPN2 and ESPN Plus. In the strawweight division, Yan Xiaonan -135, Claudia Gadelha +115. So two straight wins, Ian, for Claudia Gadelha. She'll try to inch closer to a second title shot here. Yan Xiaonan, how about 5-0 in the UFC? 10-0 with a no contest spanning her last 11. Ian Parker, what do you think? The favorite Xiaonan or the underdog Gadelha?
I am going with Xiaonan here. I just like what I've seen out of her, that aggression, that poise, well-rounded. I think for Claudia, her last couple of fights, I think where that hesitancy with the output and trying to get this fight to the ground, she's becoming too comfortable with that striking against this opponent. That is not a good idea. So I'm going to go with the favorite here. Absolutely.
Ken Flo, the first strawweight fight in UFC history, July of 2014 in Atlantic City. It was Claudia Gadelha versus Tina Lahadamaki. I was there. Remember being impressed with both athletes. But it's been up and down for Gadelha since, right? 12th UFC appearance here. Tried to do something she's never done before, which is win three consecutive fights. Slight dog here against Yan Xiaonan. How do you handicap the matchup?
You know, I could see actually Gadelha, who really gets off to a great start for most of her fights, winning this by submission. I think if she takes her down, gets the right position, she could finish this fight early. However, you know, you look at Yan and her propensity for going the distance and, you know, winning these decisions. I could see her outpointing her as well. That's the way I'm going to go. I think Yan is going to be able to keep her on the outside, eventually tire Gadelha out. And win by decision.
And by the way, we have an intern starting next week who's going to keep track of all these numbers, maybe a new scoring system for 2021. And don't you worry, the Duck is sticking around in some capacity. I know it's been a little swell for the Duck fan base over the weekend, so we're paying attention. What are you doing? I'm giving you some fucking shine. What's the problem? You're putting your hands in the air like that emoji, like...
No, we didn't even get to the second fight. We're already talking about my future. I love it. It's okay. No, we're good. We're good.
Your future is fairly secured.
I appreciate that. Back against the wall, duck flies high. Let's
fairly
go.
In caps.
All right, big fight at middleweight, Ken Flo. We'll have you lead here. This one's got some heat on it, folks. Ian Heinisch, the guy with the number next to his name, it's a 15, but it is Brendan Allen who is the -135 favorite. Heinisch comes back +115. So Brendan Allen, Kenny, pretty impressive young kid, 3-0 in the UFC, ton of experience despite being like 25 or so. And now he's left Milwaukee for South Florida, Rufus Sport out, Sanford MMA in. What do you think about Allen here against Ian Heinisch in a fight, by the way, that initially was slated for June 27th? It shall be done this weekend.
I'll say this. I think Heinisch is one of those guys who, even if you beat him, he can make you look bad. He's awkward. He's tough. He doesn't go away easily. You know, he's a solid wrestler, can get you on the ground, can beat you up. You know, definitely will swing for your face and try to knock your head off. But I do think that Brendan Allen is very skillful. I think he brings a lot of skill here to the table that I don't think Ian Heinisch has really had to deal with before. I think Allen is a guy to watch for sure, a guy who I think will fight for the belt one day. Has, you know, the youth, as you said, but has a lot of experience and is really good everywhere, in my opinion.
He is.
So I think he's got the right mindset as well. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Allen here.
Ken Flo likes B.A., Brendan All-In Allen. On the other side, Ian Heinisch, crazy story. You should look it up, but he's certainly been through some things in his personal life. Professionally, he's coming off a win over Allen's teammate and friend, Gerald Merschart. That was UFC 250 in June, and you may recall he was supposed to fight Allen, Ian, a few weeks later, but shortly thereafter when the fight was sort of announced, Ian Heinisch pulled out. So then Brendan Allen fought a very game Kyle Daukaus and was extended by him. But I think you're going to get a big effort out of both of these guys. What do you think about the middleweights coming up Saturday night?
I think Kenny broke it down pretty much perfectly. This is Brendan Allen's fight, I think, stylistically 100%. The only concern I have is if Ian Heinisch shoots in for a takedown, it looks like Brendan Allen's a little too comfortable jumping on guillotines at any point in the fight. And I think what we've seen is that past the first round, it's just not a good idea. And sometimes when guys are too confident in their jiu-jitsu against a guy like Heinisch, Heinisch will be happy to sit in your guard and grind out a round and land those shots. And Allen can pull off the submissions, but I don't see Heinisch as a guy that gets submitted from the top like that. You know, I think Allen's gonna have to use his jiu-jitsu if he gets taken down to get back up, where I think he's the more technical striker compared to Heinisch being wild. However, that being said, I think Allen has way more tools to win. And if I don't pick him, Bilal Muhammad will unfriend me. So I do like Brendan Allen. I'm curious to where his journey goes. I do see a lot of potential in that kid. Ceiling's really high. Absolutely.
Bilal doesn't seem like the unfriending type.
No, but I didn't let him borrow my computer for his show this weekend, so he was upset. I'm just kidding. He was here. He was like 15 minutes.
Yeah, he was in South Florida.
He randomly hits me up. He's like, yo, show starts an hour. Can I borrow your computer? I'm like, you know, you could do your show on the phone. He's like, yeah. I can? I was like, yeah, you're good, bro. Imagine this guy shows up at my house, borrows my computer, and then like drops it off. I don't see him again for a year. That would have been a good story.
It was a big seventh episode for Remember the Show, by the way, on this very channel with Dustin Poirier and Paul Felder. But I got to say, man, right? I wish he had your computer, but I wish he just had a fucking door or a quiet room. Did you see Jared Gordon like banging fucking pots and pans in the background of Bilal's show? I mean, I love me some Remember the Name, but like I'm an audio guy, so I listened to that show. I wasn't necessarily watching it, and I hear all the pots and pans. I had to text my executive producer Cody Merrow. You got to get that message to Bilal about the fucking pots and pans.
At what point did anyone think it was a good idea for Bilal to shoot the show with Jared within a 5-foot, 10-foot distance from him? What do you think, that was going to go off smoothly?
Right.
I'm surprised he wasn't behind him hitting everything that whole time. Come on. But great episode for them as well.
All right, co-main event at heavyweight, Tanner the Bulldozer Bozer, -260. Andrei Arlovsky is +220. We'll need the round and the method of victory. We will have Ian Parker lead here. So here's my thesis statement on the fight. I am calling it, but Bozer is a top 12 heavyweight in the world right now. I found, I think, 6 heavyweights in the world in the top 15 that I think he beats, despite not being ranked. He's -260 here against the ageless Andrei Arlovsky, who makes his 33rd UFC appearance here. Ian Parker, Bozer, Arlovsky, who do you like?
I can't believe how many fights Andrei Arlovsky has had in the octagon. It really is crazy. I remember his fights dating back to Tim Sylvia. I am such a Bozer fan here.
Me too, bro.
Such a big fan. Personality for days. Oh, man, this guy's marketable. He is hilarious. He's humble. Great Twitter situation going on with him. And I think he's getting better every fight. I really do. I don't think he's just a brawler. I think his striking has gotten way more technical. The angles he's taking, you know, the way he's moving his feet, he's not just bulldozing in, no pun intended there. He really is just tightening up this game and the fight IQ. I'm so impressed because when he first got into the UFC, you're thinking another brute brawler, a guy who's just going to, you know, rock him, sock him, robot. But he's really being super efficient with these fights and he's finishing. And I think a guy in Arlovsky who does not threaten the takedowns, who is very hittable. I mean, like, the most hittable person ever, potentially. And that's not a knock on him. It's just the way he fights as well. And his age, you know, nothing against Arlovsky. He'll be an all-time great. I just think this is Tanner's fight to get a nice name on his resume. And I'm going to go knockout round one for Tanner.
Tanner Bozer, round one, TKO or knockout. Kenny, we've talked about somebody grabbing this Canadian market by the balls, right, and selling out the Bell Center or somewhere else, Toronto or otherwise. We've talked about Hakeem Dawodu and others, and maybe Tanner Bozer with the mullet and missing teeth. He won't even tell you why he's missing the tooth. Don't ask him. We tried in a fighter meeting. He don't want to go down that road. But karate guy, very thoughtful martial artist, right, who, you know, fancied himself a modern-day Lyoto Machida at times, has studied George St. Pierre. On the other side, Andrei Arlovsky, the more known quantity, 41 years old. UFC debut was November 17th, 2000. UFC 28, high stakes at the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And despite the fact, Kenny, that he was outside the UFC competing for more than 6 years from 2008 to 2014, he still could end up retiring with more UFC fights than anyone ever. And he won his last one on May 13th against Felipe Lins. What do you think about Arlovsky here trying to make it three wins in his last four as an underdog against Tanner Boser?
You know, this is a tough fight for Arlovsky. You know, he's been given a lot of tough fights. I think that he does have a whole lot of experience, and we've seen much better footwork and defensive responsibility from Arlovsky. But we've still seen that inconsistency from him, and that's what worries me the most. I've been a big fan of Arlovsky. I love that he's continuing to compete and challenge himself. I still think he's got some fuel in the tank, but I don't love this fight for him. I think Tanner Boser, a lot like Ian, I'm really high on this guy. I think this is a guy who can go really far. I think he carries intelligence about him that I think will take him a long way. I could definitely see him fighting for the belt and possibly winning it. I think he also has the mindset where he's not going to be intimidated by a Francis Ngannou. He's not going to be wowed by a Stipe Miocic and that kind of legend. He's out there to win. He stays focused. And I think he's going to do that against Arlovsky via knockout in round two.
Look at Ken Flo just fucking bringing it on Tanner the Bulldozer.
That
Boser.
Was beautiful.
I like sometimes when my opinion dovetails with Ken Flo, but I mean, you think his ceiling might be even higher than mine, but I'm telling you the best thing you probably said was that he is not a striker that will be intimidated in a striking realm with Francis Ngannou. He's just not. So maybe we found a guy who would fight Ngannou. All right, main event, Ken Flo trailing now, so he's going to lead off on the headliner here. Thiago Santos, -225, Glover Teixeira, +185. Poll results at Anik Florian Pod, about 78% of you on Santos, the other 22% on the underdog Teixeira, so that kind of flows with the betting line. And I sort of feel like for different reasons, I really want to see both of these guys win. I know now it looks like Błachowicz is going to fight Adesanya, but it would be great to see Santos come back from the debilitating injury and win. Teixeira, I'm not sure he's ever been better than he is right now at 41 years old, Ken Flo, but we need to know what you think of the betting number and ultimately which way you're going on the main event coming up in 6 days.
Well, I'll say this. Listen, if we see the Glover Teixeira that we've seen as of late, I think Teixeira could go out there and take down Santos. I don't think Santos is a big threat on the ground. I think that's always been a big vulnerability for him, especially Teixeira with that background. I think could take advantage of that and maybe, lock up a rear naked choke. Do I see that happening? I don't. I think Thiago Santos is going to be able to stop the takedowns. I think his speed and power is going to be the difference here against Glover Teixeira. Teixeira has never been the fastest guy, but we have seen him slow down a little bit more. And sometimes I think that, I don't know, I think with Glover, with his activity, I'm not sure yet if I can make a determination as to whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Because sometimes we've seen Glover look amazing, and then other times he just seems like tired, like he's been through a brutal camp with injury. So that's a concern for me, with him being 41 years old. So I'm gonna go with Santos here. I think he wins, and I think he wins early. I think that's his best shot against Teixeira, is to get a win by knockout in round one.
Round one TKO for Thiago Santos is the way Ken Flo's going on the main event. Broadcaster's dream with that first round finish, hitting a red eye to Miami right after the fight, so that wouldn't hurt. So Glover Teixeira has not lost since he turned 40. He's 41, four straight wins, all of them against good competition. On the other side, Ian, Santos's last fight against John Jones, I thought he fought exceptionally well. I felt like he easily could have won that fight 3-2. But it was July of 2019 during the fight. He injured the shit out of Jones's legs, but he sustained a torn left LCL, PCL, MCL, meniscus, cracked tibia, then a partially torn right ACL as well. It's been a long time. I think he's engaged to Yana Kunitskaya now, if I'm not mistaken, but that is neither here nor there. Ian, do you see any value on Teixeira, and ultimately which way are you going on the main event?
I think he's actually married. But,
okay.
Yeah.
It's a good update for me. I got to get that right on Saturday. So
look at that. I gave you a fucking fact for something to talk to him about. That's amazing. I'm not going to try and even pronounce her last name. So Santos. Ah, there we go. So you know what? Here's the thing. 99.9% of the time I was going to agree with Kenny with that pick, but I don't know how I do that right now with Glover on the up. And Santos hasn't fought in a long time, coming off of double knee surgery, pretty much having to reteach himself how to walk. You know, I mean, to me, I actually thought he was going to get a lesser fight Not saying that Glover is top two right now, but look, he dominated Anthony Smith. He's fought really well lately. And I think, man, to Kenny's point, I don't think this goes to distance either which way. You know, you talk about a guy in Santos who's been out of the cage for a long time. Where's his cardio at with his knees? How long has he been able to really go hard with his knees? And how hard does he go because of his knees? You know, and with Glover, he's old. He's been through it. He's been through a lot of wars. But this is the time to take a shot at the underdog here. You know, I'm going to ride the Glover momentum. I like what Kenny said. Santos in his career has always, his biggest negative has been fighting off his back. Not really a threat jiu-jitsu-wise. I think Glover does get this fight down. We do get this fight to the ground. And I think Glover is going to win by a rare naked choke. I'm going to steal that from Kenny right here. That's where I'm going. Like I said, if any time for Glover to do it, it's right now.
What round?
Oh, I'm sorry. Give me round two.
All right, round two by submission. And again, if the cardio is there and the hunger that was there for the Anthony Smith fight is there for Glover Teixeira, I fancy him a live underdog as well. All right, at Ian Parker MMA on social media, his best bet coming your way after the weigh-in on Friday. 1-0, man. Good start. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And hey, real quick, if we don't see Anderson Silva in a UFC cage ever again, I thought he was winning that fight until he wasn't, to be honest. I thought he looked better than he did in a really long time. I think for Uriah Hall, for his next fight, he can't wait that long. He really can't, because right. That type of style that he was fighting doesn't win against top five competition in that division at all. Not to say that he doesn't have that potential. I'm not asking to change who he is marketing-wise. I know he's really big on just showing the wins, but Anderson didn't really fight bad. And Kenny, I saw what you were on Twitter. You were right. Until he got a little impatient and got too close, he was winning 2-1. So, you know, if we do see him again, though, I hope it's against another legend that he could kind of, you know, ride off into the sunset with a W potentially. So,
yeah,
you got it.
All right, buddy. Best of luck on the board in the NFL. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Yeah. Later, guys.
All right. Ian Parker with us for the main event challenge. Some NFL picks coming your way. On the way out of here, today's Pick to Click brought to you by Oddshark.com. Oddshark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks with expert in-depth analysis for each game. Their free statistics, numbers, and trends will help you make the sharp picks on game day. So head over to Oddshark and start playing like a shark today. That's Oddshark.com. Don't forget the second S. I'm competing against all these handicappers who do this for a living in the Capper Cup. I'm holding my own, but I don't think I'm going to win the thing. But I do have a chance to beat our producer, Cody Mero, who now joins us wearing his Tom Brady Buccaneers jersey. Team Mero, 2-4-1, Anik 4-3. So we're taping this episode right before the start of week 8. Kickoff in 33 minutes. So we have each given you a play already. Cody is on the Chargers, I believe, -3.
Yes, sir.
And I am on the Buffalo Bills as a 3.5-point home favorite against your New England Patriots. So we need one more play for week 8. Cody Mero, who do you have for us?
John, I feel like we've really been shortchanging people with my just amazing accuracy in picks. So I'm going to give people a Monday night play, as you can see by my jersey. The New York Giants, they don't rank better than 27th in any offensive category. They face an aggressive Todd Bowles defense. They rank the best against the rush, and they're fourth in the league in takeaways. I like Brady coming in here with a locked and loaded, healthy offense. They rank third in points scored, and they haven't even added Antonio Brown yet. Going to be a ridiculous year for them. And plus, John, we're all Patriots fans here. I fucking hate the New York Giants. Give me Tampa -12.5.
Well laid out, my friend. And that's a pretty good number, 12.5. But yeah, I just don't see that New York Giants offense keeping up. Might have to tell you on Monday, but my other play on a Sunday is going to be the Miami Dolphins catching 3.5 at home against Jared Goff and the LA Rams. LA has traveled a lot. They have a lot of wins, but a lot of them are not of a high quality. They've been beaten up on the NFC East. I think Brian Flores is going to have a game plan to keep his offense in it. It's Tua Tagovailoa's first NFL start today. He's left-handed. I just think this is a good time to back the Dolphins, and you're getting a key number 3.5. So the Miami Dolphins +3.5, the pick to click for me in week 8. All right, couple programming reminders. Remember, the show will be live this Thursday night with Bilal Muhammad and my brother Jason Anik in the co-host chair Thursday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Guests to be determined, and those will come your way on social media this week. Also, your homework. Because Ray Longo said this fan base turns over every 4 years, and because we got such great response telling people to go watch Kenny Florian versus Clay Guida, I'm not throwing out the Sean Sherk fight just yet, but just go watch Kenny Florian, Joe Lozon from 2008, main event, Broomfield, Colorado. April 2nd, 2008, I believe. All the stuff that I remember that I don't need to. But UFCFightPass.com, Florian Lozon main event, and then hit me up on social media and tell me what you thought of that fight and see how angry Kenflo was in a main event setting, taking it out on a fellow Bostonian. Cody, do you remember that fight? You were like 12, probably.
Yeah, of course.
All right, good. Ground and pound.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I was born in 1993. Of course I do. But exactly. Just ground and pound. Trying to kill a man, Kenflo in his prime. Unbelievable. But we got to get on out of here. We're back with you next Monday. Thanks to everybody who checked out the show maybe for the first time last week on the heels of UFC 254. Merchandise is available at AnnickFloriumPodcast.com. Thank you to our sponsors, our guests Ray Longo and Ian Parker. And we'll be back with you on Monday, November 9th. We'll recap Glover Teixeira and Thiago Santos. Until then, for Cody Merrill, Kenny Florian, John Ann, saying so long. Thank y'all. Love y'all. Don't text and drive. Wear a mask unless you're Bryce Mitchell. I respect your take. Yo, later.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.